From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. You don't need me to explain where our connection begins this hour. We are in the aftermath of one of the dark days in American history. In this hour, we're going to welcome guests who have worked in those House and Senate chambers and offices that were overrun yesterday. But first, a brief note from me. The management of WXXI gives me a lot of room to host this show, and here's what I mean by that. This show is not about me. It's about the issues facing our community and our world. Megan Mack and I have the full responsibility to book guests, choose show topics, set the direction of the show. It is a massive responsibility. Megan, Rob, and I take it very, very seriously. And when it's relevant, I'll let you know where my biases lay. That's not because this show is about my opinions. That's because there are times when I think you should know how I feel. I'm human. You know, just in case you want to have the context to evaluate how I'm doing hosting the show. I'm not perfect. I make mistakes. I'm prone to motivated reasoning and confirmation bias just like anyone. And my goal is to be transparent when I think it's necessary. But most of the time, the show has nothing to do with my personal views, and I keep those separate. Regarding Donald Trump, it's different. 5 years ago, my feeling was that Donald Trump was not about politics. He was about himself, and he presented something potentially very dangerous to this country. This wasn't like Obama versus Romney or Bush and Kerry. This was something else entirely. And I found his bigotry and his manipulation repugnant, and I said so. And the management of WXXI gave me the space to do so, but I have tried not to denigrate his supporters or voters. I mean, I understand the late Molly Ivins' view on this very, very well. Leaders can either serve the public or manipulate the public. And yes, we as citizens are accountable for our votes and our actions, and we have to be accountable. But most of the opprobrium that I at least feel is aimed at those who wield power. And it has never hurt so much to be right. It has never been so disappointing to be proven correct. There is no pleasure in that. But the last 24 hours have pulled back any remaining curtain or veil. And I've been hearing from people who have been talking to family members, you know, families where there are split votes and a lot of tension. And I wonder how you're feeling today if you've got family members who vote differently. And the last 24 hours feels like a breaking point for some. Four people died yesterday. One woman was shot and killed. There were police who were hospitalized with injuries. There were congressional offices damaged, ransacked, looted, and urinated in. The scenes, look at the newspapers around the world. Look at what people around the world are saying about us. It's unbelievable. And so let's welcome some guests who've been in those spaces, and let's talk about maybe what yesterday means for this country and where we go from here. And listeners, we'll welcome your feedback as well. If you want to email the program, connections@wxxi.org. We're going to continue, by the way, to welcome a lot of voices. Yesterday doesn't mean that I'll never talk to people who voted for the president again. I want to keep talking. If we don't try to understand how we got there, we're going to be there again. But it's going to be a hard road forward. It's 844-295-TALK. It's toll free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. And our first guest this hour is a member of the New York State Assembly, who formerly worked for Senator Hillary Clinton and was Deputy State Director for Senator Kirsten Gillibrand. Sarah Clark is with us. Sarah, welcome. Thanks for making time for the program.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. Although I just almost teared up at your words, so I hope I can make it through.
No, I know. I know. I mean, I think we're laughing because what else can you do? I'm not saying it's funny. I think it's a sort of a mixture of emotion that's hard to express. Yesterday was an important day for those working in New York State business. When did you stop and realize what was going on in Washington yesterday?
We had a packed day. I mean, we were in session for the first time, kicking it off yesterday. We were getting our committee assignments, getting ready to just put an agenda together for the state and what we needed to do in the weeks and months ahead as we get ready for the budget during a pandemic and a crisis. But I all of a sudden started getting constant texts from both my husband and those that I have worked with, and turned on the news quickly, and the images were just shocking. So it was probably around 3:30 that we just couldn't even work anymore. It was just consumed by what was going on
sure.
and the tragedy unfolding.
Sure, you're looking at a national emergency here, and I'll you yep. know I'll be honest, Sarah. I mean, everybody knew yesterday there was going to be protests, and the protests
right.
protests are part of America. That's okay. There were going to be people in the streets chanting and waving signs. That happens. I think for a brief moment when I heard, you know, I was getting texts from colleagues that they're going into the Capitol, knowing that inside the Capitol they were doing the business of certifying the election. I thought, well, they might try. They're not going to get in. To see it happen was surreal in the very, very least here. What was it like for you to see it actually breached in that way, knowing that we're supposed to have security in these spaces?
Having walked the halls there for, you know, almost 20 years in many different, you know, meetings or with during certain protests or even celebrations or excitement, it feels like one of the most safe spaces. Having forgotten my ID and not being let in someplace, being stopped at various points to check for my staff ID, the fact that I've watched people, you know, just burst into a room and immediately be escorted out and taken away in the plastic handcuffs or whatever. I knew the protest was happening. I just never imagined people would get in. It just doesn't feel like that kind of space where something like that could happen. Watching people scale the walls, desecrate these offices and these sacred spaces where history has happened for centuries, it was hard. It was really, really hard.
Mm. That particular building, you know, until yesterday, I was probably like a lot of Americans. I don't think I've been in that building. I mean, I haven't been back to Washington in years. And, you know, I had to see an overhead map of kind of a diagram of where the different chambers were and whatnot. So for those who have not spent time there, how large of a building are we talking about? I mean, what's that space like?
There's various space. I mean, some of the pictures I was watching is where we sit as members come in to vote. You know, I was looking at the floor as people were being, you know, laid down and arrested. That floor, it's almost like, in your mind, you just equate it with members who are coming in to vote, senators who are coming in, and to see it sort of overrun in that way. I mean, some of it, particularly in the older sections, are very, you know, disjointed. It's not huge open space. The visitor center is obviously where you get into much bigger spaces. What I've always found strange about it, or what I've always found strange about yesterday, is most people who walk through there with like a reverence to the history of our country, with this just sort of awe of all that is hanging in there, all the tiles, every space, and the stories about who has walked these halls. So to see people just have no regard for that was just completely appalling.
I want to read the words of Sean Davis, who is the co-founder of The Federalist, which is one of the publications I think is responsible for some of the most just really obvious disinformation and almost apparatchik-like devotion to this administration. And frankly, not even an administration. It's one person. It's still hard for me to get kind of believe this. But what Sean Davis writes, and I can't buy a shred of this, but you've been there, so tell me if you agree with this. Assemblywoman Clark, he writes, quote, "I've talked to multiple people today who arrived at the Capitol yesterday and believed it was open to the public. They thought they were allowed to be in there, which might explain why you saw so many people carefully staying inside the velvet rope line in several pictures," end quote. I mean, I guess Sean thinks that people climbed a cement wall, shattered a window with a shovel, and then thought it was a tourist day. I don't buy it, but I'm curious to know what you think.
I don't buy it either. There is not one. We always say the people's house. We always say, you know, these public institutions are owned by us, the American people. That is very true. But it is very clear where there is not just complete access. I mean, I think about yesterday. I mean, the vice president was in the Capitol. So that's just a whole nother level of security on top of what is normally there. And all members and senators, we're going to be coming in and out. You know, the security levels can change sometimes based on you know, who's in the Capitol at that time. So the fact that people were able to get in so easily, given all who were there yesterday, is really astounding and amazing to me. But I don't believe that for a second, the way people were climbing walls and hanging off balconies and just sitting in the seats of the speaker's office in just such a writing and I don't buy that at all.
Yeah. I'm left with a couple of questions for you. Is there anything going forward? I mean, we're talking about this like it's a one and done event, Sarah, but I mean, the president is still the president for two more weeks, barring some sort of action, which still at this point doesn't look imminent. There's chatter already about on January 19th, trying to get in there a day before an inauguration to go back and take over spaces in Washington to prevent Joe Biden's inauguration. Are you confident, having worked in those spaces, that there will be lessons learned from yesterday and that these situations will be avoided in the future?
I hope so. I'm very hesitant in the fence. You know, Donald Trump represents a lot of what happened yesterday and then incited a lot of it, in my opinion. But the people that he represents aren't going away. The misinformation that has happened for decades and the using misinformation to get votes, to sort of go along with Donald Trump and enable his behavior, we have to hold people responsible for that. We have to understand that misinformation has generated a complete distrust in the systems that require trust in order to make our democracy work. We have to have trust in our media. We have to have trust in our government. We have to have faith in our elections. I'm just very nervous with how you put the genie back in the bottle. Is this as dangerous as yelling fire in a crowded room? In my opinion, it is.
Before I let you go here, you now represent in the New York State Assembly voters, a wide range of voters, and you know, you comfortably won a primary, you comfortably won the general election, but you know, you still represent people from across different viewpoints and ranges of feelings. And you know, I mentioned Molly Ivins at the outset, the late columnist who wrote affectionately about individual voters whose beliefs she found repugnant, and she blamed leaders for sort of demagoguing and manipulating. How do you sort of interact with voters who, and maybe with your constituents, who maybe support what they saw yesterday or support the president or have very different views from yours? And how do we sort of go forward from here, knowing that, you know, I don't think it's healthy to shut people out of your lives, even though I understand people are feeling a lot of pain and I'm seeing that in a lot of spaces. How do you work in your professional capacity, knowing that there's a lot of rough division right now, Sarah?
So conversation and dialogue can never stop. I mean, we, no matter what, particularly among our electeds, behested on us to be those who continue conversations even when it's hard. I think there's two, you know, when you're quoting Mitt Romney, who says that elected leaders have one thing, they just need to tell the truth. We did not tell the truth to the American people that this election was fair and run well. But it's, you know, something that we have to now lean really heavily into, is understanding the difference between opinion and fact. We have to confront mistruths in a much more aggressive way than we've been doing. We also can't disregard people's opinions or thoughts or what got them to this moment and what may make them feel like everything's against them or whatever it may be. We have to continue those conversations. We have to find a way to at least listen, if nothing else. That is what I've always pledged to do, and I've always pledged to say, we may not always agree, but I will always tell you the truth from my perspective of what I will support and what I will not, so that there's no misconception there. But this is beyond misconception. This is literally like you have said, using these issues to manipulate people into actions that are just abhorrent and, in my mind, domestic terrorism.
Yeah. Well, I guess you're back at, are you going to try to refocus on state business? Is that, what's the rest of the week like for you?
I am going to try. You know, I have to say I've been through transitions of power before, both in the Capitol and in the administrations. And people are upset. People feel that things may have been unjust or unfair. That's not to say those things can't happen and there aren't spaces to air those. But I also want to say that it's not just Donald Trump. I am just so upset with the senators and members of the House that continue to underride the faith in our election. There is nothing more sacrosanct in our country than our elections. And to compare us to countries where they are not fair and to make people in our country doubt them in such a way that they would storm our Capitol is, I can't let it go. So I will try to get back to state business, but I am not going to let it go in terms of holding people responsible and accountable.
Yeah, I'm with you there because I think if I were to guess, I think the majority of the people who were protesting for Donald Trump and storming the Capitol yesterday, I think the majority of them actually believe the election was stolen. They actually believe there were some either foreign powers or rigged machines that somehow didn't affect anything but the presidential election in a small handful of states. I mean, I know we laugh at this, but I think they believe it because that's what they've been told over and over again. And they've been told that by the most powerful person in the world. So I think that they believe it. I know Ted Cruz doesn't believe it. I know Josh Hawley doesn't believe it. They are cynically using this moment to try to bolster their own credentials with a growing population of voters that they once abhorred and probably still do. They don't believe it, but they are playing, they're sort of cosplaying this idea. And I don't know where it goes from here, but I'm with you on holding that accountability because I know that they understand differently.
And to hear some of them say, I just didn't think they would believe us. Mm-hmm. I don't even know how to wrap my head around that. So we have a lot of work ahead. That is an understatement.
And I know it is a very busy week for you and your staff. We had Nicole Hushlerae on, and I know everyone is working so hard on state business this week. So I apologize for intruding on the time, but I appreciate the perspective and thank you very much for being with us. I hope we're talking about something very different very soon.
Thank you. And thank you for allowing space for these dialogues.
You got it. That's Sarah Clark, New York State Assembly member in the 136th District. She formerly worked for Senator Hillary Clinton and served as Deputy State Director for Senator Kirsten Gillibrand. And Sarah Clark has been in those spaces that we saw overrun with extremists many times. Catching our breath here. I've got emails I'll read as we go throughout the hour here. If you want to email the program, connections@wxxi.org. You can call the program. It's toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. And, you know, I mean, if you want to talk about what you saw, if you want to talk about how it's impacting your relationships with family members or with others in your life or where we go from here, we can do that. And I want to welcome Alex Udelson next with us, who's a former City of Rochester Chief of Staff and a former Obama White House aide, worked in Washington. He's back with us now. Hi, Alex. Thanks for making the time for the program.
Hey, Evan. Thanks for having me.
Let me just start with, can you take us through yesterday? When did you know just how out of control things had gotten? I mean, were you sort of watching hour by hour, or did somebody call you and say, if you are not watching, watch this?
No, so it was weird. I remembered that the Electoral College the certification was happening yesterday. And so I kind of had it on the TV in the background, and I was scrolling Twitter, and I saw some, scuffles with Capitol Police. And it didn't really occur to me that this was going to be such a, just infamous day. I mean, really until they breached the Capitol, I wasn't paying that close attention. I figured that, mm-hmm. Senator Cruz and Hawley were going to do their grandstanding, and it would take, a few hours to get through. And I really, I wasn't about to listen to their speeches. I just don't really believe in giving them, the time of day. So I really wasn't paying close attention until, you know, you see a guy with a Viking hat in the middle of the rotunda, and you, and it's just kind of so just, you know, shocking to see what's happening. And, you know, with today's world, you can kind of follow it real time as it's happening. And so it just obviously ended up consuming everybody's day. But I really, you know, I was expecting, you know, the sort of usual nonsense, both from the president's supporters, his grassroots supporters, you know, holding their, you know, one of their many rallies that they've held over the past few years. And I was expecting the usual grandstanding from, you know, the president's sycophants in the Congress, but I was blown away by what I saw yesterday.
I've tried, Alex, in recent weeks to read more about QAnon, to try to understand what the not only what the ideas are, but how it was supposed to play out yesterday, because so much of this was telegraphed. I mean, a lot of people should have seen this coming. There should have been a lot more security. There were people in the rally who were wearing shirts that said January 6th, Civil War.
Right.
And the president told his supporters after a 70-minute speech, he told them, I'm coming with you. Let's go. He, of course, lied to them. He didn't go with them. He went home. And he put his feet up and watched it on television. He didn't go with them. But right. but part of what was ordained in through these QAnon ideas was that the president was going to be there and was going to do any number of awful things to his political opponents, Republican and Democrat, including perhaps the vice president, who ostensibly betrayed him by refusing not to certify or saying that he couldn't, you know, do what the president wished. How much have you sort of followed that I guess I'm wondering, Alex, I mean, like, do we all need to become better scholars in this stuff? Because it's a lot more prevalent than we realized.
Yeah, well, I think about it two ways. One, you know, I don't think people need to understand, and which I actually don't myself, the specific platform of conspiracy theorists, right? Because I think conspiracy theorists generally share a lot of the same principles and traits and values, and the sources that they get their information are generally the same, right? Social media, you know, these different forums and, you know, dark internet places that, you know, I don't really understand. So I think it's important from a policy perspective to understand how they're getting their information, how that information is spreading, and to understand when they're going to essentially do a violent coup on the Capitol, which was not a sort of spontaneous demonstration. It was planned. They had T-shirts. Like, I can't understand how we didn't see this coming, especially from a security perspective. But at the same time, I don't think it's you know, necessarily important to read up on the specifics of what they think, because this really started, you know, in my opinion, I was a freshman in college during the first Tea Party rally, and I was in D.C. At GW, and I walked down to the National Mall to see what was going on, and it was similar stuff. You know, perhaps this specific, you know, QAnon theory wasn't around back then or widely spread, but I mean, you know, this really started with the selection of Sarah Palin as vice presidential candidate, in my opinion. That's sort of the inflection point in history where we gave credence to conspiracy theories. We you know, started to value misinformation and incompetence and, you know, frustration with government. And in some cases, rightful frustration with government sort of evolved into frustrations and anti-intellectualism, anti-truth, you know, just being able to determine the veracity of an election. And it's all spiraled into this. And so I sort of see that as the starting point. And I don't think the specifics of the conspiracy theory of the day are important, but from a policy perspective, understanding how that information is being spread and why it's being spread is, I think, critical for the next few years.
Mm-hmm. Let me grab a couple of phone calls. This is Peter in Rochester first. Go ahead, Peter.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, Hello? Peter. Yeah.
Thank you for having me on.
Sure.
I've been anti-Trump since the get, and I tune into Lonsberry to get a smattering of, like, his take on stuff. And to his credit, the other day, you know, he called this for the poison that it is, and today he said he needs to be extracted via the 25th. So that's cool. But then I heard one of his callers say that, oh, yeah, you know, it's really a shame, et cetera, because I know deep down Donald Trump is still a great man. And this is what you're dealing with. I mean, I don't know, like, how he pulled off one of the greatest cons in our culture. I mean, here's a city guy who wants to be a gangster who, you know, extorted New York City and left Atlantic City what it is. And he's got these bumpkins, okay, the white trash bait.
No, let's not
call it what it is, man. Call it what it is. What did we see yesterday? We saw hooliganism. I haven't seen that since I turned on the TV and watched people in Europe at soccer games. Okay, that everything we're watching is a con, and it just gives people, like, hey, I like that guy because he just grabbed him by the crotch. That's me, man. That's what I want to be.
You know, I'm with you, Peter, in that there is something really weird about the embrace of someone who is this coarse and crude, and I think it has pulled back something that is really bizarre that I didn't think could actually have much pull in national politics. But it's more complex than that, and I understand the desire to sort of hurl insults at the people who were there in those chambers yesterday, and I get that, but I don't want to sort of describe every single Trump voter as you said, a bumpkin or white trash. I mean, it's broader than that. There are plenty of people who, you know, would not have been in the Capitol yesterday, but still voted for Donald Trump, and are sort of tacitly supporting this. So, and as to the point about other radio hosts or other people now expressing outrage, you can't spend years baking a cake and be surprised if people actually eat it. Sorry, it's too late. Now, it's never too late to come around, I think. I don't know, Alex, is it too late? Maybe I'm being unfair.
No, it's absolutely too late. I mean, it would be one thing if, you know, the president had turned out to be, you know, a lot different than he campaigned on, or, you know, had done a bunch of great things. And maybe, you know, this was not something that he, you know, specifically over the past 4 years had basically been inciting. I mean, this wasn't just the past couple of weeks. I mean, he's been talking about, you know, basically, if he loses the election, it will have been stolen from him for a couple of years now.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can't all of a sudden excuse people, whether they're radio hosts who have supported him, or if they're Trump White House staffers who, you know, didn't feel the need to resign when he, you know, tear gassed a bunch of people so that he could hold up a Bible he's never read, or, you know, when he, you know, threw kids in cages. You can't sit there through all of that, and then when this happens, because it's gaining so much attention, you know, start your job search a couple of weeks early and hope that you get to go on a redemption tour and look like the bigger person. I mean, if you stayed there through all of this, if you stayed a supporter, I mean, you've got some soul searching to do. And if you want to apologize for the past, you know, 5 years of your advocacy and your support, and that this has made you realize, you know, that the past 5 years of support for this guy has been wrong. That's one thing. But if you're just all of a sudden mad that, you know, that they stormed the Capitol after 4 years of frankly very linear buildup to this moment, you know, I've got to just, you can't have a pass on that.
Yeah, somebody smarter than me tweeted yesterday, instead of saying, boy, that escalated quickly, they said, boy, that escalated incrementally over 4 years. I mean,
yeah,
that's
very steadily.
Yeah. Yeah. And so when I say it's too late, I don't mean it's too late for people to change their minds or their views or see, you know, an error in thinking, because I'm wrong all the time. I try to teach my son, saying I was wrong is a really empowering thing. Saying I don't know, or I got this wrong, or this new information changes my mind is a wonderful thing. Being humble is a wonderful thing. I need to do better at all that stuff. So I'm not saying individual voters can't like say, whoa, I voted for that. I'm saying people in power, people with influence, people with microphones, you knew better. You knew. Mm-hmm. That's who I'm talking to. Ted Cruz, Josh Hawley, radio hosts. It is too late. This is not the point for you to realize that this is a dangerous situation. I want to grab Don and Bob on the phone. Alex, I also want to ask you about just, you know, sort of having worked in Washington a little bit more specifically. Can you hang on for a bit, Alex?
Of course.
Okay. So Alex Udelson's a former Obama White House aide and a former City of Rochester chief of staff who's on the line with us. And we'll take a couple more of your phone calls. Let's take this only break and come right back on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, how did they do it? How did New Zealand eliminate COVID? We're going to talk to a New Zealander who moved to Rochester about 30 years ago and just last week moved back to New Zealand permanently. He's still holed up in a hotel waiting out his two-week stay before he can go home. Mike Johansson, live from New Zealand where COVID doesn't exist, next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Bob in Rochester next on the phone. Go ahead, Bob.
Yes. Evan?
Yes. Go ahead, sir.
Hi. Thanks so much for doing the show. Great first guest. I'm really looking forward to the next. Yesterday I texted with my sister. She's working for New York City Hall, and she described this as a staffer's worst nightmare realized. And probably anybody working, you know, in public service. But I kind of wanted to, I guess, kind of add to some of what you said in your touching opening, but basically how tragically obvious the matter this was. You heard a lot of people say, like, never in my lifetime did I expect this. Mm-hmm. And not just over the past 4 years, but I mean, kind of more recent history. You know, I remember growing up, with lots of different, hearing stories of lots of different, like, militias and paramilitary standoffs, and then the more recent, like, Bundy stuff, the Clive and Bundy and Ammon Bundy occupation, and kind of how those events emboldened these paramilitary groups that compounded with, like, the fascistic approaches that Trump and previously Bannon had been taking, even before Trump, just kind of dismissing and delegitimizing journalism. I'm just getting really frazzled talking about this, honestly.
Well, I understand the emotion, but let me ask you something here. I want to read something I just received, Bob, and I want to know how you feel about this. Josh and Aronicoid emails say, Evan, thanks for the wonderful introduction and remarks. I don't feel that yesterday was a bad day for the U.S. It was a great day. The Republicans like Ted Cruz were revealed for the un-American seditionists they are. And best of all, the American democracy prevailed. Now Biden and Harris can fix what Trump and his enablers broke. That's from Josh and Aronicoid. I don't agree with Josh. I don't think you can look at yesterday and say that's – I mean, I understand the point he's making, that there's no denying anything now, that we can move forward. But I can't imagine yesterday being anything but a tragedy, one of the worst days in this country. How do you feel, Bob?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, I might not be the kind of target audience that needs to be affected and moved by this. I'm really happy. You know, I mean, it went from, I'm not going to lie about where I stand, like policy-wise and everything. I was excited to see the slim margins of victory. For nothing else, to see potential for functional government from the national level again. I didn't want this to be right about this, you know, talking. And I think that was the problem, is not just people that are on the opposite end of the political or ideological spectrum. It's like people that agree with me just could not believe, like, come on, that's not going to happen. This is not going to happen. And I really wish it didn't happen. And I don't think it shouldn't take awful things for incremental gestures of sanity.
Yeah, I hear that, Bob, and I appreciate the phone call, and you know, I wish you well. Alex Udelson, how do you contrast how Bob is feeling to Josh and Aranequi? Because to Josh's point, I mean, I understand the idea that there may be a benefit to at least having no denial anymore and to pushing enablers to finally come to grips with it. But I still don't see that as a gain. I mean, Ted Cruz still voted to block the election, the certification yesterday.
Right. Yeah. No, I frankly don't see any part of yesterday as a win for our country. And I think that's for a few reasons. I mean, first of all, you know, Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley, they don't actually believe what they're saying. It's a very cynical ploy to try to win the Iowa caucus in 2024. And actually, I have a friend who went to law school with Josh Hawley. And I mean, this is a guy who went to Yale Law School. And it's not that everybody who went to the Ivy League is smart. It's certainly absolutely not the case. But you can't be such an educated person and actually believe the nonsense that's coming out of his mouth. And when he gave the speech on the Senate floor last night, I mean, you could just tell he had no conviction in what he was saying, and it was all political calculations. You know, if we don't act, you know, as a country, whether it's impeachment and removal or 25th Amendment, you know, we're going to be, in my opinion, I think we're going to be in real trouble going forward. There's a documentary that was just released in the last couple of years called The Edge of Democracy, and it's on Netflix. It's a documentary about Brazil and their sort of devolution into fascism and authoritarianism with Bolsonaro. And, you know, I watched it. I made the mistake of watching it during our election, which was, you know, an anxiety-inducing experience. But, you know, they had a relatively stable, democratic government with Lula and Dilma Rousseff. And it devolved pretty quickly with the same movements that we saw yesterday, with the same misinformation spreading, and with the same sort of false heroes of these folks who have never cared about the working class in their life, but they've conned people into believing that they are the savior and that it's the government bureaucrats and the elites in Washington who are ruining their lives, and it's the same, you know, nativist ideology that backs up a lot of what has been going on. And this isn't new. It's been there since the Tea Party. It's always been a part of our fabric for a lot of people. And if we don't do something about it, if there's no accountability for what happened yesterday, you know, if they only arrest, you know, less than a quarter of the amount of people that were arrested during the George Floyd protest, and if the president gets away with it and his enablers, I mean, we're marching a very scary path here into understanding that, you know, senators like Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley, they can take these risks. It might lead to, you know, three or four people getting killed, but it also might, you know, lead to them winning the Iowa caucus. And that's a really, really dangerous path for us to march down. So I don't mean to sound, you know, doom and gloom, but I think it's natural to try to find the silver lining in yesterday, and you can always, you know, look for the helpers. And it's great that they went back into session and finished the people's business, and there were still enough checks and balances, whether it's the vice president still having just a tiny bit of dignity or Mitch McConnell reading the tea leaves, whatever you want to see as the silver linings that democracy held up, that's great, but that doesn't mean it's going to happen next time. And I think that should be a real warning for people in going forward.
Oh, boy, yes. And for all of the Michael Tracys of the world and the people who are saying, stop calling it a coup, a dude in a Viking hat is not going to prevent Joe Biden from becoming president. Look, first of all, at least one woman was shot and killed, and apparently, according mm-hmm. to police, four people died. Several police were hospitalized. Dozens were arrested. They desecrated and rioted and looted in the chambers and tried to stop the business of Congress. And had Congress not acted quickly and gotten the hell out of there, someone might have gotten killed. They were talking about hunting down Vice President Pence, hunting him down. Mm-hmm. That is not the language of, we want to have a conversation with Mike Pence.
Right.
I mean, Mike Pence's life was in danger yesterday. And just because it was bumbling and clumsy doesn't mean the next time it won't be better organized. And these things snowball. I mean, you have to be ignorant of history not to know that this is a very dark seed that's been planted, even if it doesn't work this time. I don't have any patience for people saying, don't call it a coup. This was just bumbling. This is three dudes in Viking hats. This was not. This was thousands of people egged on by the president himself. Now, to Alex, to your point, before I jump back to phone calls, to your point about removal, today we saw the first Republican in Congress come out and say the president has to be removed before the end of his term. This is a congressman from Illinois named Alex Kinzinger, and this is what he had to say this morning.
All indications are that the president has become unmoored, not just from his duty, nor even his oath, but from reality itself. It is for this reason that I call for the vice president and members of the cabinet to ensure the next few weeks are safe for the American people and that we have a sane captain of the ship. Section 4 of the 25th Amendment allows a majority of the cabinet and the vice president to assume the duties of the office of presidency until the president is able to himself. It's time to invoke the 25th Amendment and to end this nightmare. We will arise from this, but we cannot forget what led us here. The liars and conspiracy authors are already at it again this morning with false narratives about yesterday's disaster. Here's the truth. The president caused this. The president is unfit, and the president is unwell. And the president must now relinquish control of the executive branch voluntarily or involuntarily. God bless you, and God bless our enduring democracy.
That is Republican Congressman Alex Kinzinger. Alex Udelson, what do you make of that?
No, I think he's 100% right. I mean, look, after yesterday, and let's not forget that just a couple hours before this happened, the president was on the National Mall, essentially pointing at the Capitol building, telling him where to march. His top, you know, advisor, I guess, whatever you want to call Rudy Giuliani these days, said we need to do trial by combat. You know, his son or his, you know, whatever you want to call Donald Trump Jr., he said something along the lines of you can't look weak down there. You have to look strong or, you know, whatever. And so, you know, this was specifically incited by the president and his closest advisors. So, you know, if we don't, you know, what is the point of the 25th Amendment and impeachment and removal and all of these other various checks and balances if we're not going to use them in the ugliest, you know, incident in American political history in the last, I don't know, 150 years? I'm not a historian, but this has to be, you know, up there. So what is the point of these checks and balances if we're not going to use them? And if we start to set a precedent by not using them, even if it's only 2 weeks, that sets a really dangerous precedent down the road. And, you know, my biggest fear has always been, you know, what is this guy going to do in his last few weeks in office? Because he's crazy. He can't accept that he lost. He's got, you know, almost unlimited power with a Supreme Court that has been, you know, very sympathetic to executive power these days and a legislative branch that has given him leeway to do whatever he wants. And so I think he's absolutely right. They need to act today. I mean, this guy, you know, I hate to be the guy to say this guy can't have the nuclear codes, but this guy literally can't have the nuclear codes mm-hmm. among the other many, you know, powers that the president wields. So I absolutely agree with him. And whether it's impeachment and removal or the 25th Amendment, it's got to happen, and it's got to happen fast.
Let me just rip through some phone calls here, and we'll take as many as we can here. Don in East Rochester. No, that's not Don. That is – who's on one now? It's Bob in Webster. Bob, go ahead. Keep it tight. Go ahead, sir.
Bad New Year's, gentlemen. very upset. Mm. Very, very upset over this. We've lost our soft power. Our State Department, our ambassadors. What can we do now? Our soft power is gone because of this event, because of this president. It means our service people, our service men and service women, they're going to have to spill their blood and die because we don't have our soft power, which we did have up before this president. What happens if Xi goes into Taiwan? What happens if Xi goes into Hong Kong? We've lost our reputation. We've lost our credibility to every single person in the world who struggles and craves freedom. Our treasure is not in our 401ks. Our treasure is our democracy. He needs to be removed, as well as every senator and every congressperson who endorsed him and kept with him. They need to be censured, and I am going to go out and find out who supported these people, and I'm going to have a boycott of all their companies. Any company that supported these, gave them money to campaign, I am going to go after them. And I'm going to have a national boycott to get rid of these guys, these traitors to our democracy. Our democracy, the treasure is not your 401k. It's not in gold. It's in our democracy. And that's been destroyed. And our boys and girls, our men and women in uniform, today and in the future, are going to have to pay a heavy, heavy toll because of this man. This horrible man who is our president, he needs to be removed. So go prepare and do it, Congress people and senators.
Yeah, let me just jump in, Bob. I feel the hurt there. And, yeah, I mean, I hear you there. The ramifications of this for enablers will be very, are very unclear still. Whether it's people in Congress or people in industry or those who've supported most closely, knowing that this was almost a certainty. But let me get a little bit more feedback here. This is Don in East Rochester. Go ahead, Don.
Thank you for having me. I witnessed two things. I got two things out of this yesterday. And the first thing is, this is how fascism gets started. The only thing missing in yesterday's decor were the black shirts and the brown shirts. These are fascists. They're fascists. This is how it starts. Mussolini in 1922 marched his black shirts down to the Italian parliament. They took it over, and he took power. This is fascism. The second thing I would like that I got from yesterday's events was that, let's say that this had been a Black Lives Matter demonstration. Let's say this had been... they're horrible Antifa, and Antifa means anti-fascist, that those police would not have reacted that way. Those police would have had the clubs clubbing within seconds. These people would not have been allowed to get anywhere near the Capitol building if it had been Black Lives Matter, Antifa, or socialists, or anything like that. They would not have been allowed anywhere near the Capitol building because the police would have went out in strength to crush it. The police were weak yesterday. They didn't. I can see a little bit of disorganization and not knowing what to do right away. But the police treated them with soft gloves.
Well, I you're not the only one who has observed that, Don. And I appreciate the phone call. And I've got email I could read for days from listeners on this. But let me turn back to Alex Udelson, who's a former Obama White House aide who worked in Washington. As we sort of get ready to wrap this emotional hour, I mean, Alex, you hear the pain and the anger that people are feeling. I don't know how you sort of build. I mean, you worked for a president who absolutely tried policy-wise and in his actions to kind of build bridges here. And bridge building is not even in the political game right now. What happens next here, right, Alex? About a minute left here. Where do we go next?
Oh, look, I mean, I think both Don and Bob are right, and you can feel the emotion, and you can feel, you know, the fact that, you know, we often, you know, would throw these words like fascist and authoritarian around in the past, and, you know, people would use them on someone like George W. Bush, and it would get kind of laughed off the stage. And, you know, now we're at a stage where we're really using these terms in their most true and in literal sense. And we have international institutions like NATO putting out statements about our elections, you know, I mean, like we're some third world country. So I think the pain and suffering is absolutely right. After yesterday, it was a traumatic day. you know, I think people should rest assured that Joe Biden's going to be inaugurated on January 20th. I can't, even if he's not your perfect candidate from a policy perspective, I can't think of anybody better right now who's been through both personal and political hardship to try to unite the country to the extent that it can be united. And everybody's going to have to do their part to talk to their neighbors and to talk to their friends and to lead us out of this darkness, because this isn't just going to be one person or one event. We need to strengthen the checks and balances and hold people accountable and change our policy and our dialogue.
Beautifully said, Alex. Thanks for making time for the program. Alex is a former City of Rochester Chief of Staff and a former Obama White House aide. Thank you for being with us today, Alex.
Thanks, Bob.
I hope the next time we talk with him, the circumstances are different. We have more connections coming up.